People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Don't let the bells end, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the 12 Rambles of Christmas in association with Bet365. We're on number 10. It's the business end.
Oh, yes.
It's business time,
Don't
gentlemen.
Let the bell end. Bells end.
Chocolate rain.
We were listening to a bit of Tears on Day before we started. Mm. Let's stick that in there.
I'm feeling festive.
I've never heard of him before.
That's so strange.
Mm. It is strange.
Mm-hmm. But here we are, ladies and gentlemen, for more strangeness in the world of football that we love. Now, we love a keenly contested match in football.
Hence the derby.
Exactly.
That we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. A good old-fashioned ding-dong where it's end-to-end from the off. When your team comes out on top of one of those matches, it's very enjoyable. I think a 4-3 or a 5-4 or something like that. Yeah. Very enjoyable. Indeed, it's also enjoyable when your team absolutely tear another side to shreds. Today, we're looking at The Hammering, ladies and gentlemen.
Starring Christopher Lee. 1956, The Hammering. Very good. Hammer horror.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, there's so much. The Hammering. When you watch a side get completely done.
But your positive mindset, Marcus, where you say, oh, it's always great when you see your team tear another team to pieces.
Yeah.
Of course, when you're on the other end of it,
it's awful.
It's not quite as pleasant.
It is awful.
Absolutely not. And I mean, how are we defining a hammering? Because we have discussed what's what over the years. I mean,
yeah,
me, it's got to be plus five.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Five or more.
So you're saying 4-0 isn't a hammering?
I disagree with that. Because
you don't think?
Yeah, no, I because when Milan beat Barcelona in the Champions League final, 4-0. I mean, that's a hammering, especially in the context.
I mean, maybe I'm just
the context is important.
When Hearts beat Hibs in the Scottish Cup final,
maybe I'm just a more discerning.
It depends because
connoisseur of the hammering.
Well, but your boundaries.
I'm talking like drubbings.
No, I am as well, but you can have an extremely one-sided affair.
Mm. Yeah, it's not just about the scoreline, is it? I mean, you could come out of a game winning 4-0. And it could have been 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And that's a battery. I mean, that's an absolute hammering.
Yeah, I think that...
That's about as one-sided an affair as I'm having with Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Exactly.
Think about when was it Liverpool beat Manchester City... Manchester United 4-1 at Old Trafford when Torres gave Vidic a terrible time.
But Gerrard scored 2 penalties
and
missed a third.
Yeah, was it 4-1?
Yeah, I think so.
See, in the context of that, there was a hammering. But I see what you mean. If you, I think for the purists, you're talking probably 4 and over.
Yeah,
I would say.
Or certainly that's the margin, not necessarily the goal score.
I think that's fair. And I think the other thing that's, it's not just about scorelines, we have to make that clear, but another thing that I feel is vital in a hammering is, and I'm talking about when you're watching it as a neutral here, you see a couple of goals go in and there's suddenly a situation where something's happening here and everyone knows it.
Heads are going.
But no one really knows what to do about it. So before you know it, like professional players just seem really physically drained and emotionally all over the place. Managers appear instantly powerless to do anything about it. The atmosphere in the stadium goes weird.
Yeah.
And you know you're on for one. And sometimes it's hard to sort of really properly quantify what you're watching, but you know you've seen it. And to me, that isn't necessarily that much to do with the scoreline. Mm-hmm. That's more to do with how the game plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not talking about Manchester City thrashing Huddersfield at home. You can see that coming.
Yeah.
We're talking about them smashing Man United at the Swamp.
Yeah. One at the Swamp. But the thing with that, though, as well, is that for every for every drained player on one side, the player on the side that's winning is energized. So you get this perfect kind of.
They smell blood.
There needs to be
an
equilibrium. There needs to be that balance where one team just lose their heads and the other team are energized by it, as I say, and then you get those mad scorelines between big teams.
You're not going to get
rare.
You're not going to get the mad scoreline if the team who are on the up think, do you know what? We've got another game on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Let's just, this game's won.
Yeah, let's try and see this one out.
I like it when the manager doesn't make substitutions.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to save him for Tuesday. No, you're not. You're going to get him to score another two.
Well, it's if you see the panic in the team that are losing, that's when it's, as you say, when you smell blood, and that's when you get these delicious ones. I suppose that Brazil, Germany would be a really good example of that.
Yeah. Oh, they were ruthless as well. I hate it when managers do rest their players when they sort of go, oh, we've got a big match in midweek. Because no, that's not what football is about.
Exactly.
Make something memorable for the fans.
There's nothing more annoying, and I've long thought this, as, you know, say you're watching a game, as a neutral, and one team goes 3-0 up at half-time.
Yeah.
There's nothing more annoying than
taking
when
the foot off the gas.
No, when the manager has obviously said to them at half-time, right, nothing silly, let's play the game out, and the game finishes 3-0.
Let's make it a friendly for the next 45 minutes. Yeah,
And I
want to see people streaming out of the flipping stadium.
Yeah, I want to see a season ticket thrown on the ground. but usually, it always seems to be at the feet of Steve McLaren.
Paul Lambert.
Sometimes Lambo, yeah. But Marcus, you said at the top of this, we all like a ding dong affair. Yeah, a ding dong affair, like a 4-3 or 5-4. And we do, of course. Mm. And it's great to go see a game where there's two teams going at it, especially when it's a big game and you don't know which way it's going to swing. That's fantastic, of course. But I wonder if there's something about the human psyche, the same way that people slow down on the motorway to rubberneck a car accident or whatever, which is a very well observed phenomenon. Mm. I wonder whether the drubbing, the hammering, the battering is actually more enjoyable to watch as a neutral.
There's an odd pleasure from it.
Yeah, like, as you know, sort of like you feel like a bit of a, like you're rubbernecking, basically.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's two great things about seeing a hammering, or two scenarios which can play out. One is when you see a really good side showing how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sometimes when you watch Spanish football and Barcelona hammer some, you know, sorry bunch of
that's hammering
suckers.
Is made boring, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. However, when you see Barcelona, the likes of Messi and whatnot, in full flow, you sort of think to yourself, yes, this looks like a training match, but my goodness, you know, you see the players who are at the top of the profession kicking ass, and there's something amazing about
that. What was the Real Barca match we watched around Andy Brassel's house once? Was that a 5-0?
Well, that was a hammering.
Yeah.
That was a classic hammering.
There was a 6-2 in the... Was that the same season, maybe?
I can't remember, but it was around that time. It was around that time. But the other one, of course, is when you see a smaller team hammer a bigger side, which is very rare, and you think, damn right, get that up.
I can't remember.
Well, which is why.
Oh, I'll tell you a good one. MK Dons beating United in the League Cup under Van Gaal. They beat them quite handily.
I can't remember the scoreline.
So
looking at Manchester United, so this is why, with regards to the scoreline, it can be, because if a side gets a couple of goals at the end and makes it a little less embarrassing, but I'm talking Southampton 6, Man United 3.
Yeah. But can I just say, in the League Cup in August 2014, MK Dons with Will Grigg and Benik Afobe, who both scored two each, beat Man United 4-0.
That's a hammering.
The nils definitely works, isn't it? There,
and Man United's lineup was De Gea in goal.
Already.
To be fair, the players you'd recognise, Johnny Evans played, Javier Hernandez, Danny Welbeck played, Shinji Kagawa played, Yanazai played, Pereira, who we've seen around about recently. So that is a...
not a team that should be losing 4-0.
Should they be losing?
That was the rarest of beasts.
Any team with Shinji Kagawa in, it should be hammering MK Dons. He was a string puller.
He was a great player. He still is. And the great thing about that game, just finally, Will Grigg scored two, 65 minutes, subbed off. Benik Afobe came on to replace him. He got a couple as well. Just having a lovely time against Man United.
Yeah.
It's just fine.
Walking the park.
A Tuesday night treat that is.
Man United have been involved in some. I mean, like I say, I think the Southampton 6-3. I mean, Roy Keane was sent off early on.
Yeah.
So I think you could count that. But I mean,
it's a funny one, that. So an example would be also the Portsmouth Reading, the 7-4. Did Portsmouth win that or lose that?
They won it.
They won it. So were Reading hammered? Because they scored four.
Yeah, it's weird. That was, from what I remember, that was more of a case of Portsmouth having a field day, but also just showing the sort of concentration you usually expect from such a team, and just, you know, conceding four but not really caring about it.
Yeah, whereas the first major hammering I can remember, I mean, and I think it still is a joint record in the Premier League, was when Manchester United beat Ipswich Town 9-0.
Yeah.
Andy Cole scored 5 goals.
Yeah, that was the one that I was going to go for. I mean, it was just incredible. Bearing in mind that Ipswich had beaten United, Manchester United, earlier in the season, 3-2. So it's like, it wasn't like they were the whipping boys or anything.
Was it Craig Forrest in goal?
Yeah, it was.
You were saying to me, didn't he?
He went on to play for West Ham and he, I think, conceded 7 against them. Against Man United.
Head's gone.
Man United,
he's having flashbacks.
Man United have dished out some hammers. Yeah. 8-1 at the City Ground. I mean, that's away from home. Yeah. Against a respectable club, 8-1.
Away, it's more impressive away, isn't it?
It is.
It's really, really something. But going back to that Ipswich game, didn't Paul Ince take a really cheeky, quick free kick in that? I think that was my introduction to the idea of the quick free kick. That's the first one I remember.
Was that right?
I can't remember the specifics of that game at all, really.
What about the 8-2 against Arsenal?
I did want to talk about that, because when it happens to you, it is an almost surreal feeling. Past 5 goals, you're just numb. They go in and you feel a bit sick, but it almost it's as bad as it.
You have to, don't you?
Yeah.
I remember when they beat Arsenal 6-1. I think that was in January, was it? It was early on in the season, and
Stefan
Ferguson
had his nightmare.
Yeah, I think Arsenal equalised at one point. They were up at about 4 or 5 at half time, and I remember after the match, because Arsenal was second in the league, or certainly the most likely contenders.
Yeah.
And Ferguson said, and this was in January, I'm pretty sure it was January, it was maybe only just into the second half of the season, and Ferguson was asked, or Ferguson said, I think it's impossible for Arsenal to catch us now. And they said, what, so you think you've already wrapped up the league? And then he smiled and went, no, I didn't say that. I said, it's impossible for Arsenal to catch us. And smiled.
but you know, that 8-2, that was in August of, so it was quite at the start of the season. And I remember... That was, I might be wrong here, but I think that's the first time where I was thinking, because I think Arsenal had gone for a transfer and they hadn't really signed anyone, and Wenger was under quite a lot of pressure. And that result, it was almost a bit like, I can remember, we were doing the ramble then, and I think the chat might have been a bit around, I mean, what's Wenger going to do after this? Where can he go after this? Because, I mean, what do you do when you're such a proud manager who's won so many different trophies? And also... The undertone to this, when we talked about this on one of the earlier shows on the bus stop or whatever it was, where these were rivals, right? These were the guys who were going at it, going at the league title. Arsenal were getting a double. They may not have won the league. And these were the only two teams that were really worth a damn for a long time. And suddenly, Ferguson's United are still right at the top of the tree, and Wenger's been resorted to this. It had a big effect, I think, on the psyche of Arsenal fans and their attitude towards massively. Wenger. And rightly so.
I think even Ferguson said after that game, the 8-2, he said, I don't think we need to beat Arsenal. You know, we should need to show a bit more respect. He was a little embarrassed.
Yeah.
He was. And I suppose it's easy to say that when you've just handed out a hammering like that. But I think it was really interesting.
As the Germans were against Brazil, by the way, of course.
Didn't stop them, though.
No, but they did say, apparently they had a conversation at half-time. Tony Kroos was saying they had a conversation, said, look, come on.
Yeah, they didn't need to go and score a couple more in second half.
Didn't need to.
No, they wanted to fill their boots.
Right, gentlemen, after the break, a little more hammerings chat.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Football Ramble. It's the 12 Rambles of Christmas, because we're in number 10. Yes, I mentioned there that Alex Ferguson was a little bit embarrassed, and Germany spoke about that at halftime. Didn't stop either of them, though, of course. In Italy, the hammering is actually, or traditionally, has been frowned upon over the years. Not so much these days, I think, because Juventus have racked up a few wins. I remember Inter winning 7-0 away from home not that long ago. But in youth games, I think they used to, I don't know if they still do, they used to stop the match.
That's right,
if
yeah.
it got to 4-0.
That's yeah. really interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's...
What are you learning
it's
there?
It's not like it's a tap that you turn on and off, is it?
I think that's the right thing to do. I think you acknowledge that the game's... At that age, you acknowledge the game's won.
Right.
There's no point seriously psychologically impairing young players.
No, but I think...
A bad day
out. But rescuing a terrible situation, isn't that part of footballer's...
Sure, but I think once you get... I mean, I don't know if it's four, but if it is four, then fine. But you can imagine when you get to five
nine,
or six...
Yeah, if it's about nine or ten, yeah, fair dues, that's done. But like four... Does nobody remember the Arsenal Newcastle match?
that's a good point.
You won't let us forget it.
That's second half hammering, if anything.
Yeah. But surely that's where you learn some grit and determination and steel. That like maybe there's 20 minutes to go and you're 4-0 down, but you learn to be better in that last 20 minutes and you grow from that. And I think, as they say,
you know, the most dangerous scoreline is 4-0.
Well, you know, Jim, you've hit on something there, because I remember when I was a kid playing for a team or playing for my team or whatever, and if we got beaten heavily in the first half, I remember our manager really saying to us, look, you've got to go out and win the second half now. You've got to treat it like a mini game. You've got to go and find a bit of self-respect. It doesn't matter if you lose 6-2, you've got to win that second half 2-0. Because where I grew up playing football, there was quite a few teams who were really, really good. Mm. So you'd always know you get battered by them. Mm. And I think it was important for us to learn. And having said what I've said earlier, yeah, I don't think I would be that happy even at that age if I had to stop the game early because of that.
Because it's pretty much throwing the towel in. Isn't it?
It's rolling over, isn't it?
Showing your belly.
one hammering that really shows you how fast football moves is when Sven-Göran Eriksson's Man City were beaten 8-1 by Middlesbrough.
Yeah. Yep. Last day of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was Sven's last day in game in charge as well.
You'd hope.
Yes. He was gone. He was gone. Yeah. I think it was Shinawatra. He was in charge at the time. Sven was already on his way out. I mean, was that a parting shot?
D-mob happy.
Parting shot?
Yeah.
You'll do anything for your man, won't you?
He won't for his.
It's all part of the grand plan, wasn't it? It's all part of the grand plan.
Yeah.
All right, then. Have that, so-and-so. I witnessed a hammering once. It might be the only massive hammering I've ever seen. It was at Chelsea when they beat Aston Villa 8-0 in 2002. And 2012 rather, 8-0 it was. And I'm not joking, Brad Guzan had a good game.
Yeah,
he made some saves in that game. It was
help us out, lads.
It was so strange. And when it's a bigger side beating a poorer side, there's a real, I suppose, almost carnival atmosphere and a bigger boy kind of number one. You can see the away fans are bloody miserable, you know.
Yeah.
Then it's a cold day. It was in the winter and so on. But when it's a bigger side, it's almost unsurprising. Whereas when you have a smaller side rack up a load of goals, they're almost a bit like laughing when the fifth or the sixth goal. They're like, some people have never seen their side score six goals in a game.
I don't think I've not been at a game where it's been 8-0, I don't think. Not a professional game.
I've seen a 7-0. It was Arsenal beat Slavia Praha, and it was magnificent.
Yeah.
Even though it's a team you'd expect them to beat. The fact that beating them that well and by that sort of scoreline, it really was a magnificent spectacle.
But you mentioned Brad Guzan there playing all right. I mean, I interviewed Chris Kirkland for a Ramble Meet, as you guys know, and he was in the goal when Spurs beat Wigan 9-1 in 2009.
Oh, I mean, that's a hammer.
A couple of things about that. One is that I felt the same thing. I watched that game or highlights of that game in preparation for the interview, because I knew it would come up. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'll see where I land it, see if I mention that or not. But if I do, I need to know what it's about. So I watched, and I came away from it thinking, basically, poor bastard, because he makes some all right saves in that game.
Wasn't it 1-1 at half-time?
It was 1-0 at half-time.
Gordon Bennett.
And the thing Chris Kirkland actually said in the interview, and it's obviously available if you want to go listen to it, if you haven't already, is he said that the first thing he said after the game back in the dressing room, like before anyone goes anywhere, these fans have come a long way from Wigan down to London. We need to pay for their travel.
Let's give them something to remember.
Yeah, one player refused.
It's interesting. What,
so I don't care. I'm not bothered.
We're getting off course slightly, but it is interesting.
That's what I'm saying.
His comments were very interesting.
It's not off course, but just purely because hammerings affect people in certain ways.
Yeah. And you find out about
people's characters in those situations. That's what I was going to say.
And they found out about an unnamed sadly.
He wouldn't name him, but I think it was Hugo Rodriguez.
Well, we can only speculate, of course. Yeah. Peter. Newcastle Hello. 8, Sheffield Wednesday 0.
Yeah, well, that was a good one. I remember that one. More importantly, I think like the derby results for them against Sunderland have been quite interesting. I remember a kid when I think Sunderland had been beaten 5-1 with Kevin Nolan getting a couple and Shola, of course, putting it away.
Remember a lovely volley in that game from Shola.
And which rarely happens. And I remember one kid going, I think it was 9-1. He had his hands up to make like the 9-1 signal. That was 1908.
That's what we spoke about.
It lives long in the memory.
When talking about derbies, we were talking about the one in Uruguay and so on. That there's an extra something when a hammering happens in a derby.
Well, but that's where the emotion comes in, isn't it? And that's where the kind of perfect, almost Goldilocks zone we were talking about earlier. Of where one team are energised by the other team losing their heads. In a derby, that is amplified so much.
Totally, yeah. And that's where, I mean, 1908, you know, people remember that stuff.
I mean, the child was about 10.
No, but it's still there, like that happened. And when it's a derby game, I mean, Man City beating Manchester United 6-1 at the Swamp, you know, the spell was broken.
Yeah. Oh, that was a real turning point.
It was.
That was a really significant moment. And that's that.
There can
that's
be
the power these things have.
I think some Manchester City fans may well think that's their most cherished memory of being a Manchester City fan. It wouldn't surprise me.
And I think like people who maybe have only just started enjoying football and enjoying the Football Ramble less won't remember the fan zone. Sky used to have two random fans just sat in a studio.
I mean, they weren't random. They're basically out of work actors.
The commentary. Alternative commentary. And the ones they chose on the day was a rampant kind of like maniac kind of Man City fan. And the other one was...
Was not a Manchester United fan because the Manchester United fan hadn't turned up.
Yeah.
So oh, is that right?
Inside information.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, right.
So poor bloke was sat there getting
being humiliated.
He was, of course, from London. I think he was a Manchester United fan, but he was definitely second.
He wasn't meant to be doing it.
Yeah, he wasn't meant to be doing it, but he's still a Man United fan.
But the Man City guy was the most obnoxious bloke.
Yeah, but...
That was the point.
But he was really endearing with it, wasn't he? Because he kept pumping his fist and going,
yes. That was why that hammering was so important for them. Years and years they'd been second best in that city. Distinctly second best. Yeah. In fact, you could even call them third best for crying out loud.
Yeah, and this wasn't a result where it's like, all right, you're going to get one here and there. It's like, okay, we've asserted our dominance over Man United now.
There was certainly no talk about them going easy on their opponent.
It was magnificent. I think another one that actually massively goes under the radar in this conversation when people have it up and down the land is when Chelsea beat Wigan 8-0 to win the title in 2010 on the last day.
They did, didn't they?
Like that
was the season after they lost 9-1 to Wigan. To Spurs.
Yes, they're good value for a hammering, Wigan.
But not in the way you'd hope for.
No, it would appear. I mean, that, you know, the ultimate sort of big team really showed their dominance against a smaller
team. I think to sum up, the reason this is popping, the reason this made our list when we were deciding is because it's the drama of it, isn't it? Yeah. It's not the enjoying football for football's sake, like a 4-3 with amazing... Because what happens if there's a 4-3, right? You sometimes talk about the great attacking play, but more often than not, people talk about the poor defending, right?
Yes.
And you can analyse that and you can enjoy it because it's football, it's back and forth and it's a competition. This is all about the drama of it. If you flick the telly on a Sunday and it's Newcastle Wolves, with respect to Newcastle
Road,
Wolves, you're not you know, looking forward to that all week, right? Mm-hmm. But if it turns out to be 9-0
to Wolves,
we're going to be talking about that in 10 years' time.
Well, it's one of the best things that Pompey Reading game. It was one of those things where if you hadn't seen the results and you sat down for a match of the day and Portsmouth Reading was up first, you go,
oh, mate,
hang on.
Yeah.
What has gone on
but
here?
That was a weird combination between a hammering and a ding-dong.
But it's similar thing.
I know what you mean.
Also, as well, goals are the best bit. We're going to really boil it down. Yeah. Goals are the best bit. Let's have loads.
You're absolutely right. England beating Germany 5-1.
Can't let it go without having that in there.
Right. Finish on that.
The big one.
And who was in charge?
Oh, yes.
Sven. Emil Heskey in the 6-yard box.
Yeah.
5-1, even Heskey scored.
Mm. Yeah.
Lovely old job. Well, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to number 10 of the 12 Rambles of Christmas in association with Bet365. We're back tomorrow with the penultimate episode of the 12 Rambles of Christmas. You'd be a Grinch to miss it. Say goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
See you tomorrow.
Season's greetings and a happy new year.
This was a Radio Staccato production.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.